There's an indication, or inclination rather, to say we've had a fairly mild winter so far, but the fact is it's not even winter yet officially, and no way of knowing for sure what kinds of conditions we'll face in the months ahead as we travel the roadways. We'd like to bring in our favorite mechanic for a discussion of car care and feeding, especially as winter approaches. That would be Zach Edwards, who is not only an auto tech, but the owner of Ashland Automotive, and our guest once again on the Jefferson Exchange. Zach, welcome back to the Exchange.
Thanks, Jeff. Thanks for having me.
We'd like to point out the fact that you grew up where winters are real, that you grew up in Minnesota. And you were just telling me before we got on that you went back there for Thanksgiving. What were the weather conditions like?
Well, it was chilly, but it could have been a lot worse. I think several mornings it was below zero, and then, you know, approaching 20, 25 below zero with the wind chill factor. But I always try and think of how much worse it could be, so it wasn't too bad.
Given that this is a fairly moderate climate around here, it's not like the cars get that challenged by particularly cold weather around here, but what are some of the things that people need to be aware of that cars do or do not do when the weather turns sharply colder?
Well, some of the main things we see coming into the shop and during weather changes is battery failure, a lot of battery failures. And batteries here are not nearly as tested as they are in colder climates, but still, extreme heat and extreme cold really test a battery, and it's a good idea for a car owner to maybe get the battery checked out before, you know, coming into winter. I always tell our customers, you know, if you've gotten 6 years of life out of your battery, you've gotten about 90% of the life out of it. So you can wait for that one day where it just stops working, because oftentimes it's just like that, instantly dead, and no warning sign. Or you can change it preventatively and know that you got almost all the life out of that battery, and then be ahead of it instead of behind it.
Is 6 years about standard for most car batteries?
Yeah, I'd say 5 to 7, so 6.
All right, so six puts it right there in the middle for sure. Would you want a different battery, for example, if you spent the winter in Klamath Falls versus somebody who spent the winter in Medford?
You know, not really. The if you put the battery in your car that is the specified battery, and has it would have the specified cold cranking amps, then you're going to have the battery that's going to suit the needs of the car. And the battery manufacturers, they build those batteries to endure during all of our climates and climate changes. And so really, if anything, we probably have more battery here than we need, because we could use the same battery here as we could in Minnesota. And so the batteries here just live a much more plush life.
The difference is that you get, was it cold cranking amps? That's what we used to hear in the TV commercials. You just have more amps in the battery to start with, so you got the power to crank it on a cold morning.
Yep. And that's just a measurement of how many amps the battery can discharge and still maintain a state of charge, an optimal state of charge. So in colder climates, you know, diesel engines, they need to be cranked over for much longer period of time before they'll actually start. And so during that cranking of the engine, the amps are being discharged from the battery at a steady rate, and that battery needs to maintain a state of charge while letting go of all those amps.
The engine itself, this big hunk of metal, that can get kind of chilly. I mean, obviously engines create their own heat over time, but gas engines, we'll talk about them first, and then we can get into diesels. But gas engines, what do they need to get up to a safe operating temperature on a cold winter morning, for example?
Yeah, that's a good question. We get a lot of questions like this at the shop. I always tell my customers that even though they might have been informed that the car doesn't need to be warmed up, that it's to err on the side of caution and just let that car run idling in the driveway for 30 seconds, maybe a minute, somewhere in between 30 and 60 seconds. And the reason is that, you know, you have all these moving parts, and the clearances of these moving parts is tighter and tighter as engineering evolves. And we're talking about clearances sometimes like 0.0005 of an inch. So that's a pretty small space, and when the metal is cold, it's contracted and there's more space, and when the metal is warm and up to operating temperature, there's less space, and that space is filled by oil. And it's much easier on your engine when it's first started to not be loaded and driving down the road. It just lets everything kind of warm up, get to temperature, expand to where it's supposed to be, and so that those clearances can shrink to the clearance that they're supposed to be. And that creates a lot less wear and tear on the engine. And where you're going to see that really show is in the tail end of the life of the car. So you can pound that car for the first 50,000 miles, fine, but it's the good daily habits that are going to show in the latter stages of that engine's life.
So good operating practices and good maintenance up front are going to make for a longer back end of the car.
Right, definitely.
Zach Edwards, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, the owner of Ashland Automotive and well-versed in the workings of automobiles and trucks. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange with your questions about car care in the winter, car care more generally if you'd like, car maintenance, care and feeding, we like to call it. Join us at 800-838-3760, 800-838-3760, jx@jeffnet.org, or check out Zach's picture on Facebook. So really, it's just about warming up. It's like the music teacher used to say in elementary school. You have to warm up your voice first, because you wouldn't just get in your car, he said, and drive it off like a rocket ship.
Right. It's so true.
Time to get things going together. So are there other little things, though, in terms of maintenance or engine fluids or anything else that are good preparatory advance move things for wintertime?
Definitely. The cooling system also is a very important part of good car care. And so just to clarify, there's a lot of confusion. The cooling system is not the air conditioning system. The cooling system is the system that involves a water pump, which in the old days used to just pump water, and now it pumps a mixture of antifreeze or coolant or ethylene glycol. All those terms are synonymous. And the water pump pumps that mixture through the engine, and the engine is allowed to let go of the heat it produces. That heat dissipates into the coolant mixture, and then once that mixture is hot enough, the thermostat opens and lets that water out to the radiator, and there the heat is dissipated to atmosphere and then reintroduced into the engine, where it can absorb more heat and let more heat go, and it's just a big cycle. And if that coolant is not in good condition, several things can happen. For instance, if the coolant is mainly water, or if it's lost its property, it can freeze. And one of the reasons that car manufacturers have switched to using ethylene glycol instead of just water, which happened, you know, before I was born, but is the freezing point. It allows the water to hold more heat without boiling, and it lowers the freezing point. So if you had coolant in very poor condition, you run the risk of that mixture, which is basically water at this point, freezing. And when water freezes, it expands, and it will just rupture radiators and hoses and sensitive flanges and stuff on the engine. And all of these things are just going to cost the car owner more money because of the original neglect. And so it's just much better. I always tell car owners, you know, these are really complicated machines. And if you think about a simple machine like a sewing machine, and how much maintenance a tailor would perform on their sewing machine to keep it going, and that's just such a small, tight little unit. You think of a vehicle and how complicated they are and what they do for us every single day. And so back to the coolant, I mean, just doing a coolant flush every couple of years goes so far in terms of maintaining all of the components, including, you know, the water pump itself. And there is some lubrication that happens from an ethylene glycol mixture. It's not its primary purpose, but it does keep stuff wet and lubricated. Spinning components, they need to have a little lube.
If you have some questions of your own about auto care and maintenance, particularly as regards the winter approaching, join us on the Jefferson Exchange. Zach Edwards from Ashland Automotive, our guest, 800-838-3760 around the listening area, 800-838-3760, email address jx@jeffnet.org. If your coolant is, first of all, how are you going to check this? Because most cars have the reservoirs now where you have the backup coolant, right? Is there just a simple color check? If it's not that luminous green, are you in trouble?
Well, ideally, you know, we don't like our customers to have to come in and tell us what their car needs. We like our customers to come in and say, tell me what my car needs. And because the average car owner is not going to know when their coolant needs to be replaced. But if they're taking their car to a professional shop, the shop is going to make that recommendation at the appropriate time. And a car owner should be able to rely on that shop to just tell them what they need when they need it. Generally speaking, though, there's a couple different instruments we can use at the shop to test the condition of the antifreeze or the coolant. And you know, color is not necessarily a good test. So
okay, so that one's off.
Yeah,
the list.
And now we have also, it's fair to mention that we have long life coolants that last, you know, 5 years or 100,000 miles, and they don't need to be changed with, you know, the every 2 year interval, which would be the standard interval. But
so if you can't remember the last time you changed your coolant, for example, it might be time to change your coolant.
Right, right.
And how long a process, and how much does that usually cost?
Oh, a coolant, you can do a dump and fill. We offer a dump and fill or a complete flush. So a complete flush is like a complete transfusion, and we use some pressure so that it'll force out any junk that might have accumulated, and we offer that to for cars that have been, where cooling systems have been neglected, or if they've had the wrong type of coolant installed. Most new cars have a very specific coolant that they require, specific to their manufacturer. Volkswagens and Audis, for example, we've seen them repeatedly show up with the wrong coolant, and it just wreaks havoc on those engines. And you know, all the seals and the head gasket and every single part of the cooling system is compromised when it's designed to operate with a specific chemical compound, and that is replaced with the non-specific brand. And so there's the coolant exchange, and then there's just the dump and fill. And when you do regular dump and fills, there's probably never going to really be a need for that complete exchange. So a dump and fill is about $100, and the complete exchange is, depending on how many gallons of coolant we have to use to get it to come out clean, it can be, you know, 200 or more.
Okay, so something every couple of years for sure. We have a call on the line. Let's go to Jamie in Medford. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Zach Edwards. We're talking car care.
Good morning, Jeffrey. Good morning, Zach. Well, this is a pet bugaboo of mine. Zach, you're talking about the interior of the car. How about the exterior of the car? In this case, it involves windows and windshields. And I need a really fast, I've done this before, basically when it's cold outside and there's frost on it, I see people scraping the frost off the windshields and the windows with a credit card or whatever. Isn't it possible that you could just take some ambient water temperature inside your house and pour it over the glasses so you can see to drive on your way over? And Jeffrey, if that makes any sense, I'll just take the answer off the air.
It does, Jamie. I'm glad you brought that up, because I know that other people have asked about the similar questions about whether you should just take something warmer from inside the house and dump it on your windshield.
You know, that is, at first thought, it seems like a good idea, but there have been several people close to me, I know, that have tried that and found out that it's a very bad idea. The quick temperature change of the glass when you go from the outside temperature to even a tap, the temperature of the tap water, can, and not always, but you do run the risk of just cracking your windshield almost instantly. And so you want that temperature change to be gradual, not too sudden, or you might be needing a new windshield. So, you know, it's a good idea, but I wouldn't actually do it. I mean, it's a good thought, but
so better to expend the muscle work or spend some time with the car running and the defroster roaring.
And just get a good ice scraper, you know. And that's a challenge. Ice scrapers, everything's plastic nowadays, of course. We all know that. And I can't tell you how many times I've bought an ice scraper and thought, this thing is worthless, you know.
It snaps in your hands in cold weather.
Yeah, and it just doesn't scrape cleanly. And, you know, a CD case would work way better. But when you find a good ice scraper, you buy one for each car you own, and you stick with it.
Right. Make sure it's under one of the seats. You can find it later on.
Yeah.
Are there ways in which, since so many cars obviously are run off computers now, their engines are constantly being tuned and adjusted by the computer, are there ways in which the computer does compensate for cold weather, and what kinds of things is it going to do?
Well, absolutely. So if we talk about the older cars, the carbureted cars, they had a a thermostatic spring which would engage a choke mechanism, and the choke would basically choke off the air so that the air-fuel mixture was more fuel and less air. That ratio would change, and that's because a cold engine needs more fuel to start. Well, modern cars have sensors that tell the computer what the temperature is outside by mainly measuring the temperature of the coolant. And so we can go back to that. It's just that much more important to have your coolant in good condition, because when your coolant is in bad condition, it can start to rust the interior of the engine and also rust that coolant temperature sensor. And so the coolant temperature sensor is it's probably one of the main inputs to the central computer of a vehicle's engine, so that the engine can know what type of air fuel mixture to give.
And it all ultimately comes back to coolant, it sounds like. If you're taking good care of your coolant in the wintertime and your battery's up to date, you're probably going to have a fairly uneventful winter with your car.
Well, yeah, it should. You know, oil is also very, very important. And cars do oftentimes measure the temperature of the oil, but that is not necessarily it's important, but it's not going to look at oil temperature for first start. And you know, things are always changing, and the programming of the computers are always changing. So, and on the technical side of things, we don't always know exactly how the programming is thinking. They don't share that information with us. It's not in any technical manuals, that, you know, the strategy, so to speak, of the program. And so I would venture to think that some of the newer European cars, since they kind of paved the way for technology, they probably are actually looking at oil temperature to some degree. It's probably a secondary value that they're looking at compared to coolant temperature, and maybe looking at it for reference to make sure that everything is consistent.
We'll take a couple more minutes to take your calls. If you'd like to join Zach Edwards to talk about situations with your car care, particularly as the winter approaches, he's the owner of Ashland Automotive, and he's available here at the Exchange at 800-838-3760 around the listening area, 800-838-3760, email address jx@jeffnet.org. Is it generally Japanese cars you're familiar with the European cars, or a mix of all of the above?
We're working on pretty much everything. We do a lot of European cars and a lot of Japanese cars. And in Ashland, as far as domestic cars go, we see a lot of Chrysler products. There's a lot of, town and country minivans and a lot of Jeeps. And so we don't want our customers to have to take their cars to several different places, and so for their convenience, we work on domestic cars. And I like all my guys to be well-rounded, but we do tend to try and have a guy who might really know Chevys in the shop, and a guy who might really know Subarus, and a guy who might really know the European side of things, and then.
Are there vast differences between them? You were talking about the Volkswagens and Audis in particular having some fairly specific requirements.
Yeah, there are. They're very different. At the end of the day, a car is a car, but the strategy of the engine management system is going to be different, and the complexities of things are going to be different. You know, European cars, they're always trying to come up with new great ideas, and sometimes they flop, and sometimes they get adopted by, say, a Japanese manufacturer, and then the Japanese manufacturer takes it and runs with it and makes it even better. And so 10-year-old European cars have stuff that Japanese cars are just coming out with.
All right, let's take another call. Here's Lou and Eugene. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Zach Edwards from Ashland Automotive.
Hey, thank you so much for a great show. Two questions. Number one, I'm really old school. I'm 62 years old, so First question, is there any damage that happens if you let your car warm up for more than 30 seconds? Like if it sits there for 2 or 3 minutes or 5 minutes, are you doing anything other than burning more fuel? And then secondarily, I relentlessly change my oil every 2,500 miles, and I've never had a car go less than 300,000 miles before the engine is starting to lose power. So I am wondering if there's any sense to spending more money for the synthetic oil and changing it less often, or do you get, you know, just talk to me about synthetic versus conventional oil, and I'll just listen to my answer off the air.
All right, thanks for that, Lou. Appreciate it. So first of all, can you damage your car by letting it run for too long before you drive it?
No, you absolutely not, unless your car is air-cooled. If you're talking about a Volkswagen or an air-cooled engine, that that's going to be different because they are dependent on airflow. So if you don't want to let an air-cooled engine just sit there and idle. Mm-hmm. But if you're talking about a water-cooled engine, then and especially if it's an older car, you know, 95 or older, or if it's a carbureted engine, those things really like to have a couple of minutes to warm up. And a lot of times they just don't want to run properly at all, mm-hmm. until they're nice and warm.
All right. Synthetic oil, then.
Synthetic oil is a great alternative for some applications. And so the advantages of synthetic oil is that it doesn't break down over time like basic oil does. And synthetic oil is really good for short trip driving. So for customers that only drive 300 miles a year, their cars probably never even come up to operating temperature. Synthetic oil is great for them. But Lou, you're doing everything right by changing the oil very regularly, and you're obviously reaping the benefits of it. And I just think that it looks like you got a system that's working for you, and you know, oil, changing oil is the simplest thing you can do for your engine.
Absolutely, but boy, sure, it pays off. 300,000 miles out of every car he's ever owned. Lou, thanks for that. Don, apologies, we don't have time for your call. And I want to thank Zach Edwards for joining us once again on the Jefferson Exchange from Ashland Automotive.
Thank you, Jeff.